The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 348 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest is Brian Murphy, and he'll be on the line from Cali in the southwest of the country. And Brian has been on the show before, and some of you might remember him as the creator and director of the La Leyenda mountain bike race, a multi-stage mountain bike race in the southwest and into the coffee areas of Colombia, the first of its kind here in Colombia, and is making great waves with that. But he's also the co-founder of the Colombian Project, which is a specialist travel agency here in Colombia. And for that reason, for these reasons, we're getting Brian on the show, and we're going to have a back and forth about what needs to be done and what we hope can be done to rebuild tourism in Colombia in the face of so many challenges here. And so we'll be discussing, and it will be an open, you know, fluid conversation. Brian and myself are quite fond of talking, so you'll get you'll feel like you're sitting here with us as we natter about back and forth about some of the issues and challenges in Colombia. Many of you tuned into episode 347 with Nico Vorobyov, Dope World, Adventures in the Global Drug Trade. Very interesting from Nico there, from his parents' home in Bath at the moment. And episode 346 has obviously and evidently been incredibly popular with all of you. Magdalena, River of Dreams, A Story of Colombia. We got the one, the only Wade Davis on the show to talk about his latest book about the Magdalena River. And it's really a love letter to Colombia. Of course, Wade Davis is the author of One River, the seminal book on the Amazon River from the Colombian perspective. And prior to that was Vincent Pollard, and it was a gin maker in Colombia. You'll remember Vincent being the mixologist originally from Brighton, but via Toronto and other places, has ended up here and is behind a new project to produce gin here in Colombia. So we wish him well. And of course, mixing it up and keeping it varied on the Columbia Calling podcast. We will now leave you with Emily Hart, who will provide us with the excellent newscast. And thank you to those people who write in to commend her efforts. And it is really incredible. Yes, Emily will take over with the newscast. And then we'll be back with episode 348 with Brian Murphy. Don't go away. And thank you for listening.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of October 26th, 2020. Last Monday, the indigenous social protest known as the Mingo reached Bogota, having marched from Popayan in Colombia's southwest. They were welcomed by many in the capital, including the mayor, Claudia Lopez. Indigenous protesters took Bogota's central square on Monday and were later in the week joined by teachers, labor unions, students, and other social organizations. The indigenous Misak community carried out a peaceful takeover of El Dorado Airport in Bogota. They demand that the government put a stop to the killing of the indigenous peoples. Colombia's Commissioner for Peace, Miguel Ceballos, was scheduled to begin his tour of Cauca to talk to indigenous people with the aim of advancing the social plan for the department. The Regional Indigenous Committee of Cauca, however, announced it was cancelling the meetings. They believe the commissioner's tour is intended to fracture the collective fabric of the Minga. And another march to Bogota this week. Former guerrilla started the pilgrimage they call For Life and Peace from Mesetas in the country's centre. They're marching to Bogota to ask the government to commit itself to implementing the peace agreement and to guarantee their safety. 236 former guerrilla have been killed since the signing of the peace agreement. There were two more murdered this week in Cauca and in Caquetá. However, Colombia's peace accords are yet again under attack from the government of President Iván Duque. The Transitional Justice Tribunal, known as the JEP, has this week been refused its 2021 budget proposal. $5.2 million of the refused budget was meant for the protection of witnesses, the remaining $1.8 for a representation and support of victims who are testifying about war crimes. Last year, too, the government moved to refuse the funding to the JEP, but was forced to grant the necessary budget after international pressure. This year, the High Commissioner of the UN has met with the Peace Commission and with the JEP to urge that the government provide the necessary funding. Colombia has now reached 30,000 deaths and a million registered cases of coronavirus. Experts say the actual case numbers could be up to 15 times that figure. Intensive care units are now back up to around 80% capacity in departments including Antioquia, which is now on red alert. Further lockdowns are being proposed, though none are back in place as yet. That was the week's newscast, and now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall. This is the third segment of our episode. And our very special guest, as we said earlier in the show, is Brian Murphy on the line from Cali. You'll know Brian from previous episodes. He is the director and creator of La Leyenda, the first multi-stage mountain bike race ever in Colombia. It's made all sorts of waves in the mountain biking world. He gets experts from all over different parts, Switzerland, I believe, France, South Africa. They've all come over and everybody's singing the praises of La Leyenda. So check out the website. Of course, there have been troubles this year. Something happened this year, I think. But anyway, he'll be up again next year and up again and up running and stronger than ever. So Brian, welcome back on the Colombia Calling podcast.
I gracefully thank your invite, Richard. It's always a pleasure, mate. Always a pleasure. And as you said in your little introduction there, is that La Leyenda, it's been, what is it that happened this year? I remember something happening in March, and all of a sudden I'm walking around the streets and it looks like an Armageddon film. It's people with face masks and, wow, what did you see? I mean, how bad was it for you?
Well, I don't know. Everybody shut their businesses. I'm back in Bogota after being in Mompos for 3.5 yep. months, and businesses were shut in Mompos, and I live in a very well-heeled neighborhood here in Bogota, and it's tragic. And only the other day I read about the famous chef, one of the up-and-coming, or has won the award for best young Latin American chef, Tomas Rueda. He opened up Don Ostia and Tabula in La Macarena. He's shut down. He's just, you know, it's untenable. He will come back stronger and better. He's got the name. But these are two of my favorite restaurants in Bogota. And when it hits the top end like that, it's not just, you know, your Tienda del Barrio, it's not just your small independent place, it's places that have made international impact. So we just struggle forwards and go on. And tell us a little bit. La Leyenda obviously had to postpone 2020.
We cut a very long story short, is that we saw grumblings in the marketplace when early March this year, the Cape Epic, one of the premier mountain bike races in the world, was cancelled. Literally the night before the race, the racers were meant to register. A really difficult time and lots of problems. And, you know, it impacted folks. And we looked at that, and we made a very conscious decision early on in this whole pandemic scenario, was that let's just stop. Let's not try and even waste people's time and mess them around, both financially and with all the travel restrictions. So we just said, right, we're gonna reschedule the race, carry over our entries until the same time next year. We went out to our user base through email and through social media, and the general perception was received really well, and everyone was happy, and we basically cut back, no admin charges, nothing funny going on. We just open and transparent and said, hey, look, we're in this together. It's a really, really tough time for everybody, especially when it came to training and preparation. So we just called it a day, and we just took the pressure off people, and they loved us for it. And this year we opened the race up for next year. We sold out in 2 hours and 46 minutes. There's only two other races in the world that do that. That's the Cape Epic and the BC Bike Ride, and we're just amazed by that. And I think it's because we've got a great community of riders, we've got a great community of supporters, and we've got private stakeholders, and we've got private sponsorship. It's just been really well received. So where do we stand right today? So yes, it's been tough, but it's given us time to work on some other things around, you know, the usual stuff that's left to the, you know, it's left out is the back end operation and how we manage customer expectation, yada yada yada. But now we've got a race that's well over 500 people going on the start line in Cali next year, in the Valle de Cauca. We've got 250 people on our waiting list. We're expecting about 4,000 riders on our one-day set of races that we're launching next year, which yet again, this year had to be postponed. So to anybody who's listening, who's a rider out there, don't worry, we're going to be coming back. We're just taking a little bit of a hiatus during these uncertain times, but we'll be back bigger, stronger, and better than ever. So yeah, it's onwards and upwards, as I always say. But your point, I mean, you're heavily involved with, we do events management, and we've had a massive impact, but we've been okay because we can push out to next year and our finances are okay. For folks like you who are at the heart of the tourist industry in Colombia and have been at the vanguard, I mean, I'll speak for you. I mean, in the sense that when you went to Bon Post and did what you did, it was quite groundbreaking, Richard. And you must feel, how do you feel at the moment, the way that your industry is and how it's set for the future?
Let me just start. Let's start with something you said. You sell out your race faster than U2 sells out a concert. the hotel industry is obviously, you know, being totally impacted, if not decimated. You know, small family-run hotels, I would say, more so than the international chains and brands who can fall back on, huge loans from banking industry and so on. I mean, we had. I'm not going to lie, and I'm not bitter about it. I was at the beginning, but you just sort of take this on in a certain degree of zen now. And can be as sanguine as possible. But this year, 2020, we had flights set up. EasyFly was going to fly from, they were starting their flights to Mompos from Cartagena, from Medellin, and from Bogota, direct to our tiny airport. I had my flights for Easter. This was going to be the time when we flew in right from Bogota and were picked up by a moto taxi tuk-tuk there at the airport. None of this sort of, changeover in Corozal Sincelejo, or none of the journey from Cartagena or Valledupar or anything like that. This was the big year. In the Casa Maria, the first hotel that we opened in 2008, I couldn't have been happier. We hardly had a room open for the whole year. And the new hotel that we opened in December, San Rafael, the top end one, it was making all the right waves. All the reservations were coming in for the long weekends and so on. We were decimated. We had 6 months with about one client, what do they call them? Frontline hero, I think they call them in England, a doctor. And then, things have picked up again over the long weekends, and we've had, it's nothing like it was before, but I've made enough in the last month or so to be able to pay my staff their wages without taking out a loan. And that feels like a huge break. That feels like a huge degree of success, but you sort of have to think about it. You don't fill beds, you don't make money, you don't pay your staff. And it's tough. I'm not going to lie. So I had the opportunity to remain solvent because I have savings. But I've spent my savings. Things need to pick up. I don't want to close down. What am I going to do? I guess I could sell houses, but I'm not going to get a value for them that they are worth at this time. Am I going to find the right buyer? Am I going to find a buyer who wants the business? No. So I don't want to. And I do believe things will pick up, but it's going to be slow. It's not going to be anywhere near as fast as, let's say, the government is making out. Obviously, they want to paint a more positive picture of it all. and try and, let's say, remain upbeat. But it's this is going to take several years. I don't know. I mean, you have the Colombian project. Tell us about that.
Oh, well, we obviously, our business just literally, to coin a phrase, literally dropped off a cliff in March. And I always like to speak about the collective and not the individual company. We've experienced what you have. Obviously, we've got the Colombian project, high-end adventure travel. We've been established for many years. We've built a brand from absolutely nothing. And, you know, we were like you. We were the co-founder, Juan Ortiz. If we had a we had a business that was we were making good on all the promises that we'd made to the government, our clients, and it was we were on the crest of the wave, and all of a sudden, it was almost it literally overnight. It just dropped away, and we've just had to deal with it like you have. We've tried as best to make sure that the staff are looked after. We're okay with that. They're happy, but it's just the whole tourism sector. I've got lots of friends who work in the tourism sector and well-established hotels in Cali that are going through immensely difficult times. And the message I get back is that they feel a little bit frustrated, as in what the next steps are from the community and from, let's say, a government perspective, and also how long is it going to be before we open up? And as you said, we are opening up, but really, I just look at it and I just see that it's really tough. We've made such a headway in tourism that we've all got to stick together now and fight for our tourism trade, the Colombian tourism trade, and look into ourselves. Don't look to other countries for help and advice and steerage and guidance. We can do this ourselves. There's 101 professionals in this country, both Colombian from all over the world, who've made it their passion to promote Colombia in the way that it should be. The resources here, and you know that. I mean, you're probably more involved with those folks than I am. And you know, what do you see in the community? What's your feedback? What are you hearing on the street? It's really tough, really tough.
Well, we have. You know, in Colombia, there's a highly educated, highly capable, a cadre of people available to work. And that's what we need to be focusing on. And there is also the attitude, and it is coming through, the attitude of we need to help one another. And a few of our guests, and of course, this does not make a season and it does not make a year, have been people who are newly remote workers. So let's say people in Monteria, even in Cartagena, Barranquilla, they're now working from home and they're tired. They got tired and bored from working in their apartments and they came down to Montpós and they said, well, you know, we're going to work here for 4 days because we know this helps. And we've had people, you know, the typical Colombian family traveling overland with the abuela, the dog, the parents-in-law, everything else in the car. And they said, we're staying a night everywhere we possibly can because this helps. And if this kind of attitude it can really, I don't know, let's say inundate expectations and inundate society a bit, we're going to be okay. We're not going to make money, but we're going to be okay. And I would hope that we lean towards this. And I would hope that we are able to spread this information without the government spending, let's say, millions or thousands of dollars on international consultants saying, oh, you need to put all your work online and you need to do this. We needed to do that beforehand anyway. It's not a question now. We needed all to be, you know, digitally savvy and everything else. We don't need some top guy from a tourism institute in Portugal or London or New York to come down and say, well, now you need to focus on the national market. We know. So let's get to, as you say, we need to pitch in together, stick together, and in particular, small companies. I did notice that a big tourism company, and those of you who know tourism in Colombia, the big one, the political one, has set up some kind of bureau to create, I guess it's an advice bureau for small businesses. It's, I don't know, it just looks like data harvesting to me. I just think that they're positioning themselves again at a political level in order to be able to control what they would call as the sort of union of hoteliers and travel agencies and so on and so forth. I don't think this agency has set up in order to benefit the little man. I think it's only to benefit themselves, which tends to be a problem here.
I would, from what I've spoken to folks, is that I would agree with that in the sense that I still think that needs to happen. If you look at I look closely at South Africa as probably a good simile to what we're doing here. And they've got some of the issues. I mean, if you look at the work, they've got the same issues with crime and the way that crime has sort of worked itself into the tourist industry. And they still have a lot of promise in their national tourist board, but they are looking at new technologies. They're looking at the way that their teams work. So I read recently a company that I know quite well in London, Rainmaker Solutions. They're working with the South African Tourist Board on giving them advice and help on how they run their tourist industry based on an IT perspective, which is exactly what we want. Is that it's to make it more dynamic, changeable, and maybe fairer in a sense, is that we take out the human intervention or optimize as much as what we can do to get the message out there. Because for me, the message is clear. Colombia is a place that anybody that's listening to this article should go. Absolutely, hands down, is a fabulous place. And let's not forget, that's what most people come here for. Some of the things we're touching on at the moment are, because we live here, we have a genuine interest in the country, want to do best by the country. But I think you're right. I think the smaller organisations, the more organic companies need to come together and make their voice heard. Everyone's got a voice on tourism or opinion on whether it be your hotel or should I say hotels. Casabria, that goes back to 2008. That's a long time, Richard, to establish a business. We've been quite fortunate in La Leyenda is we do look at it and go, you know, if let's say with the worst possible scenario is next year that we don't have a vaccine, we can't travel, is that we lose probably about 25% of our international market if the borders are locked. But we've got a huge national market. What we need to do is start to re-energize the domestic tourist market in Colombia to make it more inclusive, more accessible, so that we can have our own identity based on our local market. Get that right, and then we can look further afield, because folks that are from the States and from Europe or Australasia, they're going to come to Colombia. Why? Because they know that it's a great place to come to. But I don't know, I was going to ask you a question on that point. I hear a lot of talk in the market, so to speak, about Colombia and luxury travel. And I get luxury travel. I get tented camps. You've been fortunate enough, and I've been fortunate enough to stay in tented camps in Kenya. And don't get me wrong, they are absolutely, my brother who'll be listening, he gave me the opportunity to go and stay at Little Governor's, little plug there in the Masai Mara. Absolutely amazing, fabulous. And you saw the Big Five. How do you think that is that would be replicated in Colombia? And is it something we should be pursuing?
Well, I'm interested in this luxury market, because I kind of want to know what it really means. And I, of course, I see the government entities and these private entities talking about the top end market that we need to focus on. And to some extent, they've got a point, but are we on the same level? I've seen that there are the tented camp or the tented camp in Casanare, in the Llanos. And of course, that can be quite special. But I wonder, would you spend a full week out there in a tented camp? Because on, let's say, the Masai Mara, you would spend a full week and you'd go out in your 4x4s. You're looking for the Big Five. I suppose that bird watchers would go down to Casanare for longer than a couple of days. I'm sure that they would. And I loved it. I mean, I'm not going to say anything else. I absolutely loved it. But I wonder how capable we are here in Colombia to be able to really cater for a top-end place. Because, I mean, you look at Cartagena, and that's sort of considered our long-term tourism destination. And everyone there, if they haven't closed, tragically, has always sort of pitched themselves as a top-end hotel. But when you make a comparison, let's say, with Istanbul or let's say another similar, or I don't know if Istanbul's similar, but as they would say in Colombia, nos dejaron en pañales, in terms of they left us in our diapers, in terms of service, in terms of quality, in terms of return on your money. Cartagena can be very, very expensive, and you can be getting something quite mediocre. So I wonder why we are using this terminology of luxury. And then anyone who listens to this podcast will know that I have a bee in my bonnet when people start using the word sustainable, luxury, ecotourism. I might as well just throw loft in there because I hate it. but it's that kind of thing. It's these sort of keyword strategies. And I think we need to measure expectations here.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a buzzword bingo going on. I see a lot of corporate, having spent years in the corporate world in the UK, I'm used to that. And yet again, it has its place. I don't want to criticize, mm-hmm. but it has its place. But when it comes down to actually getting your message across, you need to strip that out. You need to do honest talk and be honest with yourselves. Be honest about what your product is. And I can only speak when it comes down to product placement and marketing a brand. I can only really, because in the Colombian project, that's a tourist business. It's the business itself. Mm. It's what we offer, and the passion, the way that we do it is the thing that's left with people. That's the legacy. That's the referenceability. Whereas the La Leyenda, the race, is purely, it really is about brand. It's about building something from a blank piece of paper. Since the first day my wife designed the logo, I shared it with a few folks, and they just went, hey, that's it. It's simple. It does the job. I think what happens in our industry here is we I think we overcomplicate things because we think that we have to do that to pander to the overseas parties that are scrutinizing us. Well, no, I think maybe go back 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, we had that little bit of insecurity in Colombia about our country. We had that little bit of insecurity about our hotels, about our service, about how we were perceived. But I think we've moved on from that. I think we've got a well-established tourist market that should stand up, be tall, be proud, and pitch itself confidently in a global market. But don't play second fiddle to the people that you've touched on, those people that want to point the finger, that think they know better. Is that if we end up like that, we'll end up having our travel business be like Google and social media.
Yeah, it's true. Well, if we talk about that, I mean, social media and so on. But I want to talk about this insecurity. And you say it, there is a deep insecurity here. But I think there is the possibility now we take this moment, this 2020 moment, and we're going to have to rebuild. That's the truth of it. So many places have shut down. A lot will not reopen.
Yep.
And in this rebuilding, now I'm going to just sound like the pinko lefty liberal here, but we can start to address these deeply inherent problems in Colombia, which are problems that can benefit from tourism. That we can start to bring this in. Take a city like Cartagena, where 26% live in poverty, and they say, well, 29% lives in poverty and 5% live in absolute, so let's say, misery. And the money that comes into Cartagena, the money that comes in there must be something. And this brings me to the next thing, is I don't know, and I don't know enough about the Avianca deal and all of this money that's being, that was sort of funneled there to save, in inverted commas, a national carrier. Let's start with that. There's a lot of money around, and we should be helping one another. And Colombia has a lot of issues to be dealt with. So, I mean, do you think this is something, a way that we can manage the future? We can be involved in this?
If there's a desire and there's accessibility, and I believe that there is, I believe that without a doubt, as we've touched on, is that that Colombia has a natural resource of very, very qualified people who know what they're doing. And I want to be clear about the insecurity side of things, is that being a second generation Irish person, as in my parents were both born in Ireland. Ireland grew up as a republic, and they have the legacy of the colonial power, and it does play on the psyche. I'm making a generalized sweeping statement there, but I'm from what I've seen in Ireland, they've been through the troubles and stuff. I think Colombia is in a far, far better position, as you said, now more so than ever. Obviously, COVID-19 is, I think it's given a time not just for Colombia to recalibrate, but the world in general, Richard, let's be fair. There was a lot of issues globally around inequality, global poverty, and around the separation is that wedge that's been driven between people is that, you know, you're saying that you're a pink liberal, whatever it may be, is that wedge between left and right is we know the world isn't about left and right. You know, there's a straight path to be taken again, which brings people together. And I think that what we've got at the moment with COVID-19 is a time to recalibrate, step back, and for folks to look at what we're doing and how we're doing it. Will that happen? As I said before, if there's an appetite across all parties and agendas are open and transparent, of course it can. And I'm 100%, like you, 100% behind that, because we've been here long enough to realize that we've done everything we need to get to this point. And I think that now is the new horizon. As for your point about Avianca, I talk to friends on a weekly basis that I've met through business, through the La Leyenda, and folks that are working in that industry. And there's a lot of similes drawn between South African Airways and, you know, bailouts for airlines. And if you were a ruthless businessman, you'd say, well, if a company's not making money, it must go under. Well, sometimes it's a little bit bigger than that. You've got to look at the tax revenues coming from the people that are employed. You've got to think about what's going to happen to those people when they're not employed. But there's, I don't know, I don't know what to believe. Lots of things in the media about Avianca. Can you believe it? I find it hard to understand the timing of it, Richard. I think if I was, and I never will be, but if I was in a, sometimes I look at companies like yourself, and you just say to yourself, I wouldn't do that. As the race founder of La Leyenda, right, we've got some, you know, three key pillars: honesty, integrity, and humility, and we try and put those into everything we do. And when you do that, you end up making the right choices. Sometimes I think, and it's not just Avianca, it's lots of businesses I look and go, wow, really? You've got some very, very well qualified people there, and it's not something I would do. I'd always look after the customer, the client, the end user, whatever term people use for your customer at the end of the day, your punter, so to speak.
It's a tough one, isn't it? And you said the timing, and Avianca was in trouble beforehand. It's not just a COVID thing. I mean, it was in trouble beforehand, and the global airline industry had been, it's going through an evolution as well. So I mean, who's to say? And of course, I do think of all the people employed. And let's just clarify, it's not the national carrier. It's you know, it's something that's registered in other countries and owned by different entities. Let's get that straight out there. You know, and people will raise the question of how are we going to get around Colombia. I do think in a vacuum as big as Colombia, that there would be someone who'd come in, you know, a Branson-style figure would take advantage of something of a vacuum and just sort of, let's say, absorb the employees. I do think that because you can make money off this, I'm sure of it, especially in Colombia, where air travel is almost the norm. You just, you know, you don't think twice about it. It's cheaper. I've got a Montposina staying with us right now. It's cheaper for us to send her to Barranquilla by plane than it is by bus. You know, I think there is a way of working this out, but you know, let's not get into that.
You have to think about that. You're right, Richard. I think at the end of the day, business is business. I'm not an airline analyst by any stretch of the imagination. Let's make that very clear, nor you. But what we see, it might be the fact that legally decisions are taken for any company, but it's the perception of what the user sees. And we live in a world nowadays where your message has to be clear, concise, and in line with people's emotions. And I still think a lot of companies around the world are a little bit archaic, and they still run them autocratically, thinking that they know best in their customer. I think it goes back to my early days working for the Inland Revenue, as it's called in the UK, but now Her Majesty's Revenues and Customs. And crikey, that took a long time to get over the line, believe me. But before these taxpayers, and they find it culturally very hard to turn around and say they're actually customers at the end of the day because of the culture. But if the Inland Revenue in the UK can do it, or HMRC, I think other companies can. But I do feel for those involved, but I think someone would come in, and those slots are very lucrative. I mean, how many days, how many flights was it? Like 40 flights a day between Cali and Bogota? It was, and I used it like a bus. Sometimes I go to Cali, to Bogota for mornings of meetings and come back. Absolutely wonderful, but it's hugely important for our economy. I will say that, is that our country relies on air travel. It's because of the mountain ranges, it's so difficult. But I'm hopeful that things will be sorted out and those people will be well looked after.
And you're down there in Cali, and you say all those flights. How have you seen the situation developing down there? I mean, it's been too many years since I've been in Cali, but how, lots of businesses closed, lots of people suffering. We don't hear enough.
As you said at the top of the conversation, we're rather cocooned in how we live. But I'm still out about. I still go out for a couple of beers with the teams during the week and stuff. And, you know, I still get out and about. I'm not just on the golf course. It's and you know the joke there, I don't play golf at all. But what I've noticed in Cali, in all seriousness, is there's a lot more for rent and for sale signs, both commercially and residential. I've noticed there's a lot more removal trucks. Noticeably so. When I drive around places like El Peñon and Granada is, they're doing as best they can, but it's nothing anywhere near what it was like. So, and I know lots of businesses have closed down. Friends of mine have closed restaurants down. Hotels that are in serious, serious problems. They've approached government parties to think about what can best be done. They don't feel they're getting the reception that they need or getting looked after, which, yeah, again, I'm not a hotelier. You know that situation, but it's better than it was when we were in early lockdown. It was really tough then, but things have started to open up. Things have started to move, but it's not really anywhere near what it was. And I think businesses would be lucky to break even at the moment. I think they're just breaking even to do what you're doing, which is a very noble thing, which is if you can open your doors and make enough money to pay your staff and your overheads, absolutely brilliant. Keep yourself above water. But there's a lot of businesses that they've opened their doors on the recommendation that we're back open for business. They've done that. It's cost them many thousands to do it, and they've closed 2 weeks later. They can't make the money. It's just cheaper to keep those establishments closed. But yet again, it's... what do you do? It's got to take its natural course, hasn't it? I mean, we've just got to stay focused, stay united. It really is. But is it getting better? I think Cali's getting better than it was. Of course it was. When we were locked down and shut up for how long was it? Almost a month. It was stir crazy. You know, when you couldn't go out, you could take the dog for a walk. I mean, it was tough. However, on the back of that, what's happened from my own perspective is I've spent more time with the family than I've ever done. We communicate more effectively. We're doing the homework together with the kids. We're eating together. We're socializing together. And now that things have opened up, we're still carrying on that same vein because we value it. So as hard as it's been, I think it's not just us, probably yourself and a lot of other people, is that it's given... it's given folks the opportunity to recalibrate and just focus on what's important in life, because you can sometimes lose sight of that in a busy environment. I don't know. How do you feel? I mean,
yeah. There were periods where I was tempted to find my own studio apartment for some personal space. But no, I do, and I have intensely valued this moment. And it's been nothing like, you know, a newborn born on the 2nd of January. So all he knows is COVID. He doesn't know it either. And to be able to be around and to participate in this, you know, the first 9 months of his life. And of course, with my five-year-old, I will gripe about virtual classes. I just can't stand them, and it's not the same. But equally so, I've been there alongside him, and we're very close. And this is special, you know. This is these moments. I guess in 10 years' time, or even less, when he's an adolescent, you know, he won't want to be anywhere near me. So I've got to value these moments when I can be an embarrassing dad. Right. But I'm still going to be an embarrassing dad when he's 15. I'm going to show up at his school like my dad when I was playing in a rugby match in jean flares. My dad was 6'5", and he, so that was I remember, I think it was the scrum half went, "Is that your dad?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's my dad." He's like, "Nice flares."
that's an interesting point, is that I look at it, and our eldest daughter has just gone off to the UK to do her A-levels, and fair play to her. She's got the world at her feet. But I think job role or objective or whatever for parents is you've got to be that embarrassing parent. Because we all know as we get older and we look back, and I look back to my mum and my dad, bless him, is that, you know, my dad would come and watch me play football and rugby. And yeah, it was embarrassing. But you look back now, you go, it's only because he loved you. And I think that one of those things is that age does bring a certain amount of wisdom. And there's nothing better than the naivety of youth, is that the world is their oyster, and you can't clip their wings unless they're going to wear flares, Richard, because that is having worn flares in the era of the Stone Roses and the Manchester scene. I think it was probably one of my worst fashion choices ever, where I remember being in a pub once and one of my mates stuck his head up my jeans. That was enough.
That's the problem. Wait, hang on. I should add to this. I was playing rugby. He came in flares, which was were splattered in paint because he was about to go on a flight. So he always wore old clothes. Yeah, it was in the 90s. He was in his 60s. So it was not the right thing to be wearing. He came with his brother, who was also a vicar. So he had the dog's collar on as well. I mean, it looked like a fancy dress show on the touchline. But anyway, we won't go on about that. Listen, so let's wind this down. I mean, we've had a good natter here, and I've unearthed some voiced some displeasure, but I've also voiced some content. Positive for the future, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt, is that I'm not just looking at from Leanna's perspective. We've had an incredibly good year during such unprecedented times. But I think collectively, as you do, and we speak to people on a regular basis, I think that we've got to stay focused, stay on message, which is at the heart of what it is that we do. Columbia is without doubt one of the top destinations in the world. Let's not lose sight of that. And if we don't lose sight of that, we will get this right. It'll take work. It'll take inclusion. It'll take some tough debate and some facing up to the realities that some folks don't want to do. But we'll get there. This is a beautiful country. It can sell itself. It can sell itself.
This is true. And I don't think we need too many catchphrases and you know, keywords to be able to sell Columbia. The word was out about Columbia. So that, I mean, that documentation, those travelers who've already came, the visitors here have been here. And that's the best publicity that anyone can receive. The people who've been here who could then vouch for the quality and the variety and the people here in Columbia. So listen, Brian Murphy, Colombian Project, La Leyenda, the multi-stage mountain bike race. Check out the websites. Thank you so much for your time and your insights and the anecdotes. It's been a tough time, but again, we've got to, as you say, group together, stick together, rebuild and come back stronger.
Richard, I appreciate the invite when it comes calling from Columbia Calling. It's always a pleasure. It's I've enjoyed this one as well. It's been a little bit different, a little bit of a spin and a twist. And I think this is something maybe that we could do maybe on a regular basis, is just go out and chew the fat about Columbia. And it helps me get a few things off my chest. But I appreciate.
Well, I think so.
I appreciate him.
I think our listeners will be thinking, well, they're sitting there enjoying a couple of pints of the black stuff.
Yeah.
but anyway, we're not having a virtual drink, unfortunately. But next time we meet, we'll be in person, and we'll have a beer and a natter. And let me take this moment again to thank Brian Murphy down there in Cali for his time and sharing his thoughts on the situation and the tourism industry and more here on this episode of the Columbia Calling podcast. As always, we're back next week with another interesting person, people who are doing great stuff with something Columbia related. Of course, that's what Columbia Calling is all about. Thank you again for listening, and be sure to share and, of course, tune in each week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Corriente, cochinchorro y atarraya.